You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
When President Obama took office, the country was in desperate need of a clear economic vision and some imaginative solutions. The economy was, of course, in free fall, unemployment high and heading higher, manufacturing in tatters, foreclosures at record levels, and Obama had promised bold action during his campaign. More than 3 years later, much has been written about those first 6 months of the president's administration, the missed opportunities, the missteps, the misplaced priorities, but nearly all of the critics, and there are many, decry the absence of bold economic action. How did courage in campaign turn to tepidity in office? That's the subject of the new book, The Escape Artists, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery. And the author, Noam Scheiber, joins us now, a senior editor at The New Republic. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
One of the things I found really interesting in your book is that there really was no economic guru behind the scenes somewhere. First of all, President Obama was incredibly involved in all that was going on, and there was no unified, it didn't even seem like between two people you'd find a unified agreement.
That's right. I mean, part of this was the unique circumstances. Normally, the Treasury Secretary is seen as the first among equals on the economic team. But the thinking here was twofold. One, you were going to have a former Treasury Secretary in the White House in the person of Larry Summers. So it would be awkward to elevate the Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, who had been his former apprentice, if you will. And the second thing was, this would be a kind of economic policy making by war cabinet. You would just need all the talent that you could muster. And so there was no point designating someone to be the chief advisor, so to speak. You would just need all hands on deck. And that had some advantages, but I think it did blur the lines of authority. It blurred the organization chart, led to some infighting that probably wasn't so helpful down the road.
Well, you described Timothy Geithner sort of earning more weight to his opinions. How did that happen?
A couple things. One is Tim Geithner is actually a very effective bureaucrat. I mean that in the best sense of the word. He understands the machinery of government. He understands how to actually present an actual plan to the president that the president can act on. Tim Geithner has a favorite saying, which is plan beats no plan. And in any internal discussion, he would take a lot of pot shots from critics, Larry Summers being one of them. But at the end of the day, Tim Geithner always had a plan. The president could always see how that plan would work. And that became very helpful to his cause internally. The second thing is Geithner realized that over time, he didn't come into the job kind of grasping this, but over time I think he realized the president really needs help defending his left flank. And Geithner's attitude initially was, well, we'll just get the financial rescue right and the rest will take care of itself. Over time he realized, no, it's not that simple. There are a lot of people out there who are very, very angry and you need to give the president some cover. And so when it came to financial reform, he didn't become sort of a radical overnight, but he did understand that there are things you can do that will make the president's political advisors very happy, one of these being the Volcker Rule, which was kind of the toughest element of financial reform. Geithner didn't really love the idea, but he understood that it would help the president politically, and so he got behind it. Some of the other economic advisors were a little slower to embrace this idea that the president needed some political cover, and I think that hurt them and helped Geithner internally.
Well, we're speaking with Noam Scheiber. His new book is called The Escape Artists, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery. And it appears from your research, at least, that they kind of misread that anger that you were just talking about, that they got distracted by public opinion on the deficit.
Yeah, very much so. I think, the superficial reading of the polling was that people are very angry about the deficit. They want to trim, it had ballooned to $1 trillion in 2009, and they believe that people just want a government cut. In fact, I think if you look slightly more subtly at what the data was saying, it was saying what we're upset about is the fact that we spent all this money. We spent $700 billion of Treasury dollars rescuing the banks. We spent another $800 billion on stimulus, and the unemployment rate is still 9 or 10%. So they weren't upset about spending per se. They were upset about the fact that the spending didn't appear to be helping the job situation.
Well, but that's not the only thing, at least according to your book, that they misread. And again, we're speaking with Noam Scheiber, whose new book is called The Escape Artist. They also misread Congress. They thought that they would put a kind of moderate stimulus plan before Congress and that it would grow. And they also didn't realize that it would be so hard to go back to Congress to get more stimulus funds if they needed it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I think in a way, the experience of a lot of members of the Obama economic team in the Clinton administration, Larry Summers had been Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner had been Undersecretary, Rahm Emanuel had been a senior political aide. A lot of this experience was helpful. Some of it led them astray. It led them to overthink things a bit. And I think on the stimulus in particular, they thought they kind of understood the dynamic at work in Congress, which was you can't start too high because you'll scare them. So if you start near or above $1 trillion, Congress is just going to get sticker shock, as they put it. But if you start lower, 750, 775, it'll grow over time. And there's a funny story in my book, which I tell, which is Rahm Emanuel and Larry Summers go to Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, the Democratic leaders of the House and Senate, respectively, and they're very, very nervous. They say they're about to tell them we're going to need $775 billion. They think there's a very good chance that they will reject it as being too high. Instead, they go there and Pelosi and Reid tell them, that's fine. You know, anything up to $1 trillion would be fine. So they actually lowball this, thinking that the Democrats would be unwilling to go that high when they would have been willing to go another $250 billion higher at the outset.
So then part of the problem that, as you describe it, is not being imaginative enough, not being bold enough, not asking for a big enough stimulus plan, et cetera, et cetera. But here's another interesting exchange that you include in your book. Timothy Geithner tells the president that he'll be remembered for preventing a second Great Depression, and Obama responds, that's not enough. How did that kind of big vision end up hurting him?
Yeah, you know, so Obama had run for president when the financial crisis hit. He'd been running for over a year and a half. And the vision of his presidential campaign and on the campaign trail of his presidency was a guy who would take care of sort of generational accomplishments. He would succeed at doing the policy, bringing the policy changes that presidents had failed at for a generation or two. At the top of that list was healthcare reform, but climate change, doing something about climate change was also at the very top of the list. Had some foreign policy accomplishments that he wanted to pull off, bringing peace to the Israelis and Palestinians. And he was certainly took the economic crisis seriously, but you can understand the guy running for 18 months on these bigger ideas wanted more to his presidency than that. So he was very clear with his advisors from the very beginning, I take this seriously, we're going to do what we can to end it, but it is not going to be the beginning and end of my presidency. There are too many things that I care about too much to sacrifice it all to this problem that just landed in my lap, you know, 2 months before I'm about to be elected president.
So let me just ask you, let's say, hypothetically, that Obama is reelected, that the steady recovery we're seeing right now continues, slow and steady. Does that make books like yours, does that make arguments over what went wrong in the first 6 months of Obama's presidency, does it make them moot?
I'd say no for two reasons. I mean, one is whatever happens in the future, we had three really painful years. You know, being at 9-10% unemployment for 2.5 years is really a historically unprecedented situation, and the effects of that linger for a very, very long time. You know, we've had record high long-term unemployment, and people who are unemployed for longer than 6 months often never get back on the career track they were on beforehand. So these effects are going to linger for a long time. The second thing is just about the president's decision making, and I write about this in the book. In some ways, it's sort of implicit, but between the stimulus and the deficit negotiations with the Republicans in 2011, the president has a bad habit of undershooting a bit and waiting for problems to fester before he really takes control and really gets serious. And I think I think we've seen in the last 6 months the president's gotten better about this. He's taken on more of a sense of urgency when it comes to the economy, when it comes to really going out and making a case for his agenda. But that's something he was very slow to do. And the jury's still out on whether he's learned his lesson or this is just something that he's realized he's got to fix for the campaign, but will revert to the status quo in a second term.
Do you expect the recovery to continue?
I do. You know, we've had a couple false dawns. 2010, things looked like they were improving, and then we reverted. 2011, same thing. I think this is more than just a blip, but it's going to be a bumpy road from here on out. I do think that the unemployment rate is going to kind of level off for the next year, and we won't take many steps back, but not too many steps forward either. So more work is yet to be done, and that's certainly something that if he wins a second term, he'll really need to focus on as well.
Noam Scheiber is senior editor at The New Republic, and his new book is called The Escape Artists, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery. Thanks so much, Noam.
I appreciate it.
Noam gave a couple of predictions about the economy. You want to gander a prediction about fuel prices? They're certainly rising. You can call us at 877-8MYTAKE or post a comment at thetakeaway.org. Lyndon posted on Facebook, I'm trying to drive thoughtfully, combine errands, go less than the speed limit when safe to do so on the highway. I'm cutting out drinks and snacks from convenience stores. I'm keeping a lookout for lower gas prices along my commuter route. Since I'm cobbling together a living of sorts on part-time and temp jobs, I also have to consider how much it's going to cost to get to and from a given job, gas, parking, etc., to see if it's going to be worth the wages offered. How have fuel prices affected your life? Go to thetakeaway.org or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. I'm John Huckabee.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.